Tonight's topic is kind boundaries. It's a common belief that Buddhists are nice people and we don't get mad or rude and certainly not violent. And sometimes even we believe this, at least for a moment, until we clearly see otherwise. A few days ago, a salesman came to our door. The screen was locked, but the wood door was open because of the heat. And without hello or anything else, he started talking to my wife, who was there in the living room, trying to sell her stuff. And she politely told him that we already had what he was trying to sell. And then he kept suggesting other things that she might part with her money for, probably thinking that she was too nice to resist his skill as a salesman. And I kind of heard the tone of what was going on, and I finally called out in a loud voice from another room, "We're not interested." After he went away, Carla and I had a little chat and examined that incident from the Dharma point of view. And we both learned a thing or two about maintaining our boundaries while intending to be kind to others. Now, just as a caveat, I am a Dharma teacher and not a life coach. I'm here to offer guidance for your practice and to clarify the teachings to help you and all beings have less dukkha, in other words, inner suffering in your lives. I'm not here to offer personal strategies to protect yourself in a kind way from people who are being inconsiderate. All people are inconsiderate sometimes. Just think of all that we have to consider every moment. I would guess that most of the things people do that upset us are done without any awareness on their part that those actions in that moment might annoy someone else. Someday, try going for a few hours when you're around other people, conscientiously weighing everything you might do in light of who might possibly be inconvenienced or offended by it. It's exhausting. The fact that we cross each other's boundaries so often is not surprising. In fact, it might be a surprise that we don't do it more often. What I can tell you at this point, as a Dharma teacher, is that your practice does not require you to be a doormat. There's a famous story of a Western student who asked her Asian teacher how she might have handled better her encounter with a purse snatcher. And she was told by her teacher to take her umbrella with a heart free of ill will and hit that fellow until he went away. We can all think of countless times when others have seriously failed to observe our boundaries and trespassed against us. And usually we can remember what went through our minds and how our emotions felt physically. And maybe we can ask ourselves, even years later, if we're satisfied with how we acted in that situation. Usually, the answer is not really, or we wouldn't be thinking about it so much later. What I intend to talk about tonight is how the Buddha's teachings and your practice can help you be a bit more satisfied with the way you respond to infringements on your boundaries. You don't have to be a pushover to be kind, and you don't need to be unkind to stand up for yourself. The critical thing is what's in your heart at the moment. In one of the earliest talks that I put on the Sangha's website, I looked at boundaries between us and others from the angle of the teaching that we're all interconnected. How can we be interconnected and have boundaries? My talk had a lot of quotations and references to the teachings. And then it concluded that there's no conflict between being part of the universal whole and having healthy boundaries. As long as we question how the idea of a separate self is attached to our response to other people's offending us. What role does this idea of I, me, and my play in our getting unhappy, angry with the way other people are behaving? Now, 5.5 years later, I will stick with what I said then. And you might want to spend a half an hour listening to that talk. It's called Inner Being and Boundaries from January of 2014. But it didn't cover the method for this examination of how we experienced an incident of someone offending us, especially with this understanding that we aren't just entitled to protect ourselves, but that we should do that, that we actually protect others when we maintain healthy boundaries. The Sadaka Sutta, also called the Acrobat Sutta, makes this point quite clearly. There are a number of texts in the scriptures similar to the Sadaka Sutta, and they've been translated quite differently by various scholars who all seem to want to reach their own interpretation. The difference in the translations and the analyses of these Pali scholars turns around the question that I've been asked by several of you. How can we be kind and still take care of ourselves? The way I've always read this sutta, it says that as Buddhist practitioners, we do need to take care of ourselves first. Most commentators say that the sutta is about an acrobat and his assistant who's sometimes charmingly named Frying Pan, and variously described as the acrobat's beloved assistant or his student. Their act involved a bamboo pole, which the acrobat balanced on his shoulder, while the assistant climbed up him and the pole, presumably to do some amazing tricks while up there at the top of the pole. As you can imagine, both balance and teamwork were really important. If either of them lost their balance, the act would be ruined, the assistant would be injured, and possibly so would the acrobat. So before the act, the acrobat tells his assistant, "You watch after me, and I'll watch after you. And that way, we'll show our skill, come down safely, and be rewarded." The assistant, who's a clever frying pan, says, "No, that's not how it should be. You look after yourself, and I will look after myself. That's how we'll be safe and get rewarded." Then in the various texts, either the acrobat or the Buddha, or both of them, says, looking after oneself, one looks after others. And looking after others, one looks after yourself. So we've come back to this idea of interconnectedness. Now, some scholars make a big deal about the student correcting the teacher. Benaglio, whose analysis I'm going to follow, notes that this kind of cultural anomaly, because there's a great deal of respect for teachers. Then he also notes the acrobat's reply that whichever they consider first, they end up protecting each other. But later, Benaglio comes back to ask, which does come first, really, protecting yourself or the other? The answer, he says, lies in the Buddha's saying, we protect ourselves and thus others through practicing with the four foundations of mindfulness. These four areas to be examined through mindfulness are explained in the Satipatthana Sutta, which says that we should study these aspects of our experience internally, externally, and internally and externally. I can't tell you how many hours I spent pondering what that meant. Eventually, I just took my best guess, and I'm happy to say that Benaglio agrees with me. In short, internally, as used in that sutta, means what's going on inside us. Externally means what's going on in the world outside. And both internally and externally means we study the relationships between our inner experience and what's happening in the world, including the experience of other beings. So it's relational. Benaglio concludes, I think, quite reasonably, that we must begin with protecting ourselves by being mindful of our own internal experience. We need to get familiar with our minds and where our awareness is distorted by the things we cling to, by our clinging itself. We have to accept our foibles first before we can let them go. And only when we understand ourselves can we extrapolate from our own experience to understanding what others might be thinking and feeling. Now, of course, body language and slips of the tongue, or what we intentionally say, can tell people a lot. Like the way we all know what a dog looks like when it knows it's done something wrong and is ashamed of itself. Ears go down, tail goes under the body, they kind of slink around. They're ashamed of themselves. But we can only know what those external signals mean, the actual feelings that those beings are experiencing, by being aware of how we feel in situations like that. That's the basis for empathy and for compassion. So internal mindfulness, starting with meditation practice and progressing through daily life practice and contemplation, comes first. That way we learn to protect not just ourselves, but also the other. Quite some time ago now, when my partner Rachel was very sick with terminal cancer, she got pretty cranky, as you can imagine. I felt so much love and kindness toward her that I didn't object when she was excessively critical or impatient with me. But it began to make me unhappy. So I went to an advanced student I trusted and was friends with and asked her advice about how to handle this. She had cared for her dying mother. And based on that experience and on her impressive knowledge of the Dharma, she told me that I should not let my partner be abusive. She said when Rachel violated my boundaries, it hurt both of us and our relationship. My friend advised me that I needed to set and maintain my boundaries with a heart free of anger or ill will, and with as much kindness as was possible in the moment and to get the job done. So I did. At a time when both Rachel and I were calm, I told her gently but firmly that she needed to stop being abusive verbally, and for her sake, as well as mine, to manage the way she treated me. And she did. From then on, despite her pain and her emotional burdens, she was always kind to me. Even when she needed to ask me to change my behavior. Now, time is an essential ingredient in maintaining our boundaries with kindness. in the heat of feeling hurt or angry, we can cause more dukkha for us and the other person by blurting out our immediate thoughts and feelings. We need to calm down to examine our emotional reactions and avoid acting out in a harmful way. Analio quotes a Chinese text that says, "For one who is untamed himself to tame others who are untamed, this is impossible. For one who has tamed himself to tame others, this is possible." Taming ourselves usually requires some time to cool off and examine our state of mind in order to find a way to act that is best for all beings. And when the circumstances allow us, maybe we can ask for time to think before we act out and cause more dukkha. But a lot of the time, circumstances just fall on us like a load of bricks. And they're complex and overwhelming. So we need to accept and forgive ourselves for the way we often handle difficult situations poorly. Otherwise, we're just going to miss an invaluable opportunity to learn from our mistakes how to do better next time. And we can seize that opportunity, according to Analio, through mindfulness. During meditation or daily life, we reflect back on an incident, being as truthful with ourselves as possible. When we use mindfulness to recall our thoughts and feelings during and after the incident, trying to identify the greed, hatred, or confusion that prompted us to unwise speech or action, we're able to learn. So when we use mindfulness that way, looking clearly and without judgment on how we handled the situation and how it felt to us, it enables us to see through any rationalizations, denials, or disguises that our mind habitually uses to hide these causes of dukkha from our awareness. Our minds are very clever. They don't want us catching on. So we need a lot of kindness to overcome that defensiveness. We accept, forgive, and learn. And next time, it will be that much easier. Now, a little while after that salesman left our open front door, I asked my wife to talk the incident over with me in light of my work on this Dharma talk. During that incident, I wanted to avoid being unkind to either the salesman or to my wife. After some reflections on our emotional reactions during that incident, my wife and I both realized that each of us had been just beginning to feel invaded by someone who wasn't taking a polite no for a final answer. Carla said her discomfort was accompanied by a reluctance to be rude to this guy. On my part, there wasn't much discomfort. I wanted to protect Carla from this guy and get him to leave. And I chose this kind of anonymous way of emphasizing that we're not interested as the kindest means I could think of. I mean, sometimes you really do need to speak emphatically or sound angrier than you might actually be in order to get people's attention. There's one incident when I was practicing law, when I had to do that with my opposing counsel, and she straightened up. So after Carla and I had this chat, I apologized to her if she felt that I had crossed her boundaries by barging into this conversation she was having with this stranger on our porch. She took a minute, she seriously thought it over, and said, no, she mostly felt relief when he went away. In my practice, this mindfulness of internal experience is often paired with examinations of external factors of the conflict, primarily whatever the other person's motivations might be. I vividly recall a day many years ago when I got really angry with another driver while I was behind the wheel of my car. And this other driver had gone out of turn at a four-way stop. In the midst of my being really angry, I realized that I had done the same thing just a quarter mile ago. I remembered why I had done it on that and on other occasions. And I just couldn't be angry with that other driver anymore. It was still rude, both of me and of him, but he was gone, and there was no point in my continuing to suffer over what he had done. And, just incidentally, I stopped mostly going out of turn at stop signs after that. After I had that insight into the greed that had been making me do that. Remaining mindful in situations where our boundaries are likely to be invaded is a rich learning opportunity. We need to examine these the way the Satipatthana Sutta prescribes, diligently, with clear and unguarded view of what's happening, and without clinging to anything in the world. Most likely, we will observe reactions in ourselves that are painful or embarrassing. So we should remember that this is definitely not an exercise in scolding ourselves for being bad, especially not being bad Buddhists. As Anallio says, as we develop empathy for others, we develop more for ourselves too. And it gets easier to observe our own reactions in situations that everyone encounters, without suppressing, denying, or rationalizing the way we've responded. So what's recommended to us by these teachings is that we look inward with the clarity of mindfulness and the balm of loving kindness toward ourselves. This is an ongoing task for the rest of our lives. So we should just let go of the idea that we're ever going to get it or be perfect at this. We look out for others by recognizing that we all get unbalanced at times. Even the Buddha spoke sharply to Ananda and others in the suttas. When we give ourselves the time and the calm to reflect on how our boundaries were crossed and our reactions, our compassion grows for ourselves and all other beings. We may decide that our boundaries need a little adjusting. Maybe we're too sensitive about some things, or we just don't care about some things we should. And as a surprise extra benefit, we'll find it easier to let go of the forms of ill will we often feel when somebody oversteps our boundaries. With the greater self-assurance of knowing ourselves better, we'll find it a little easier to stand up for ourselves in a manner informed by metta. People will always be crossing our boundaries because we all get preoccupied, clumsy, and self-absorbed at times. So, let's protect us and others and our relationships to investigate and point out to others in a thoughtful and effective way where our boundaries are, with confidence in our right to have and protect them. Thank you.